like Jericho's wall, let it tumble down. Hold me in your arms and say no word.
Aloha, and welcome to Global Family Life. I am your host, Kay Snow Davis, and we have a special treat tonight with my special guest, Kenny Callahan. So I want you to just know that no matter where you are or what your life feels like right now, this hour is for you. Just relax and take a deep breath. Breathe in your aliveness. And then let your breath out release your stress of the day. Breathe in love. And release your breath in gratitude. It seems so important right now to truly, truly, consciously spend time each day being in gratitude. As our world continues to grow and change, whether we're ready or not, that coming from the inside out, being less in reaction and more in proactive, conscious choice about how are you going to move and live and have your being in the world now. It's a wonderful, wonderful practice. Last Sunday at Agape, I loved something that Reverend Michael was referring to, and I'm going to share it with you, that he had spoken with one man, and this man was so frustrated and was displaying some of his frustration in his attitudes, and he was asked, why are you so upset? And he said, I have this whole 1,000 people that I have to manage and I have to deal with. And the man told him, he said, really, you only have one person you have to manage, and that's you. Now, just think about that for a moment. If you shift your view and you let your life become your management, you are going to manage your thoughts. You're going to manage your choices. You're going to manage your reactions. You're going to manage where you expend your energy and where you spend your time. Because if you're not managing that, I guarantee you, the world will. And you're going to end up the end of the day exhausted, frustrated, possibly resentful, many things other than what will serve you and serve your health mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. We have a huge influence in the American media to enroll you in being a reactive human being, being a reactive citizen. This is the time, with the paradigm shift happening in consciousness, this is the time to choose your path. And choose your path consciously. Are you spending your life in ways that are healthful and helpful for you and others? Or are you spending your life and spending your time in ways that are harmful for you and harmful for others? It's so essential that you start with you first. And let me tell you, that's not being selfish. I know we've had a lot of programming that everybody's got to come first. Well, let's get basic here. What do they tell you on the airplane? Put the oxygen mask on your face first. If you truly want to be in service, if you truly want to honor others, you first must honor and serve and manage your own energy. If you're not doing that, then you're ignoring and neglecting you. And in so doing, you will generate resentment. You will generate resentment for others who seem to be taking your time or not appreciating you. Or you will generate resentment coming back at you, and you just can't figure out why that's happening. So I'm really, really offering to you, reevaluate how important it is that you take really good care of you right now, in every way, and in so doing, rather than being selfish, you're being self-responsible. And from that place of being self-responsible, you will have abundance, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, to share with others. And it will be an authentic use of your energy and your time, because you will first have regenerated yourself. You will first have honored and appreciated your physical body, your time allotment, your energy level. So really focus on that in today's world, where it just seems like there's unending demands, and there's unending details, and there's unending something that's just pulling at your energy, or pulling at your thoughts, or pulling at your life. So take a breath, and remember who's breathing that breath. You. You are breathing the breath through your body. And that's the place to start. How are you breathing? Shallow breathing, because your body's so tense it can't even bring in a deep breath? That's not good news. It's not good news for any part of you. Consciously breathing is immediately accessible and supportive. So take really good care of you. And then we can join hands together and hearts together and energy together to truly be global family live. To really live on this planet as though we each matter. And we do. Now, remember, tonight is a live show, so you can call in the U.S. It's 877-876-5227, Canada 888-815-0756, and any place else in the world, a direct line to BBS Radio through 530-876-3222. So for any of those who have just joined us, you are listening to Global Family Live. I am your host, Kay Snow Davis, and I have a very special guest tonight, Kenny Callahan. Now, I want to remind you that you can get more information on Global Family through the Global Family Education Center.com, www.globalfamilyeducation.com. Now, here's your treat. Kenny, I know you're here online with me, and I want to just say thank you so much and welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, Kay, and thank you for that beautiful meditation that you let us in.
You're so welcome. Now, to my wonderful listeners and our global family Ohana out there, which is our global family. I want to do a little vala'au here. That's Hawaiian for talk story. So Kenny and I are going to talk story a little bit tonight, and I'm going to give you just a little thumbnail sketch of this amazing man. Kenny is a native of Southern California and is currently residing in Sherman Oaks with his two cats, Missy and Molly. Some of his memories in growing up include his joy of going to church and participating in the music program. And by the time Kenny was 13, he was playing the piano for the Sunday evening services. This launched Kenny into his career in music of teaching for many years and directing choirs for children and adults, which included his passion for directing music for community theater productions. Now, Kenny went on to earn his Master's of Divinity degree at Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena. And in 2000, he was ordained in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America that serves congregations in the Los Angeles County. And he's currently a staff member at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church in North Hollywood, serving as their choir director. Now, the pastoral ministry is a natural for Kenny since he's always enjoyed serving others, especially those seen as marginalized or outcast in our society. You know, the black sheep version?
Mm-hmm.
And from his own personal challenges in life and his deep devotion, Kenny is working with post-incarcerated men and women who live with HIV or AIDS. Kenny himself faced these challenges. However, with the unconditional help from his family and a few friends, he successfully turned his life around. And he's working closely with parole officers in Van Nuys, California, to place parolees into transitional living centers, assisting them to enroll in appropriate health care and psychological support programs. This work, facilitated by Kenny, allowed him to develop a program that takes him into three prisons to build relationship with inmates who will parole to Los Angeles County. Kenny is in service as the events coordinator at Many Paths Bookstore in North Hollywood. This lovely bookstore is a work of art and a spiritual gathering place for the merging Eastern and Western spiritual traditions. So you can see what a treat you're in for tonight. A man who has fully lived life and has much wisdom to share with us tonight. So thank you, Kenny, for giving us this thumbnail sketch of a very active life. And I'm so delighted that in your growth process that you've chosen the field of service that you have, because when we live in a country that's building more prisons than schools, it's a really, really important issue for our whole population. The latest statistics I heard, Kenny, and you may have more recent, is that one out of every four families in America either has a friend or a family member incarcerated.
That's exactly right. And what you might find even more alarming is that 4 years ago when I paroled to Los Angeles County, the statistics for people who violated parole or returned to prison called recidivism.
Right.
The recidivism rate 4 years ago was 85%.
Oh, my God.
And the recent statistics put out by the California Department of Corrections is that this year, 2007, recidivism rate has climbed to well over 90%, which means that 90% of the men and women who parole in the state of California return to prison within 1 year. A term of parole is usually 3 years. So within that 1 year period of men and women being released from prison, they return back to live behind the prison walls in this, in our state of California.
Now, Kenny, this is an atrocious increase in just 1 year, and what do you think is the major contributing factor to this?
Well, the increase is actually within 4 years.
Oh, in four years, not just one.
I just celebrated 4 years walking out of the prison gates. As a post-incarcerated person myself, I have to tell you that my experience in prison, I believe, saved my life. And while I do not wish to return to prison, I have to tell you that in many ways, my heart remains behind the prison gates, because one of the things that I learned while in prison from other inmates was to be honest with myself and to be honest with others. A quality that I feared prior to going to prison. In going to prison, I was absolutely stripped of everything, literally walking through the prison gates, being stripped of not only my clothing, but everything that I had was taken from me. My integrity had vanished long before I had entered prison. And yet when I was in prison, there was a camaraderie that I felt with fellow inmates almost at the beginning, which was an experience I had never had in my life before. Men immediately identified me as being somebody who had never spent a lot of time in jail, never in prison. Men came up to me to help me, to give me things I didn't have. The first day I was on the prison yard, which was actually about 4.5 months after I had lost my trial and was sentenced to prison, I had nothing. You have to wait for property to arrive. So I was given a care package of a bar of soap, a bottle of shampoo, a toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant, and instant coffee from other inmates. And I can remember being reluctant to take that care package because I didn't want to have to give anything back because I feared rape and other things. But that was not my experience. People just reached out to me because I was there. And while I was in prison, it was the inmates who taught me not only how to survive there, but to be honest and tell the truth. I was also told when I entered the reception center entering the state prison system that if I ever lied to an inmate that they would kill me, and I believed that.
Wow.
And that was absolutely the truth. Inmates who lied and caused problems were dealt with by other inmates. The problem, Kay, that I see within the prison system is that men and women are simply warehoused in a cement building. You know, there is absolutely very little rehabilitation done while an inmate in the state of California. The prisons are so full that it is absolutely impossible to, number one, prepare somebody for parole. I was one of the fortunate ones in that I could think about putting systems in place for me before I paroled. My family was extremely supportive and never once criticized or made my life an embarrassment to them or to myself. However, the counselors at the prison, their job is to make sure that your paperwork is in order, meaning that you have served the number of days that the judge sentenced you to prison. It is their job to make sure that your parole officer contact is in order. It is their job to make sure that if you're not being picked up by family or somebody who can come and pick you up that's been approved by the system, that you have a bus ticket, that you have dress outs. All of these things that you have to provide for yourself is taken out of the $200 gate money that you're given when you parole from prison. Meaning also that if you have to buy a bus ticket and you have to buy dress outs at $35 a set, when you leave the prison grounds, you may only have $100 until you meet with your parole officer in hopes that your parole officer will be able to help. And in the state of California, there are no funds for parole officers to help parolees.
Oh,
so parolees hit the street with very little money, often no place to go. You are also returned to the county of incarceration. So I was returned to Los Angeles County. Now, if I were a drug dealer or somebody who was sent to prison because of violence or theft, I would have been returned exactly to the same community in which I committed those crimes. So stop and think for a moment. If a person was incarcerated because of a crime, and a lot of theft, a lot of drug dealing, a lot of violence is because of anger and other issues that people deal with on the street, and yet you return to that same community with no resources or no avenues of growth to be able to live within society at large, most people return back to the same habits and things because that's all they know. And while that sounds almost like a fairy tale, it is reality. I cannot tell you the men and women, the men that I was in prison with that told me the story over and over again, and then the people that violate tell me the story over and over again. They're almost hopeless.
Well, I can certainly hear, Kenny, with what you're saying, that for those who've been incarcerated and are paroled and have to return to that very area that they've left, that's a drug dealer's heaven.
That's right.
It's just bringing them back and making them absolutely subjected to the very conditions that were there, because the street conditions have gone on while the inmate has been incarcerated.
That's right.
And they've gone on and increased in whatever sophistication or whatever level of violence and cruelty that they can perpetuate. That's a horrifying thought to me. That someone who has already paid their time.
That's right.
For whatever choices they made, that they're then once again subjected to the very conditions that created that incredible change in their lifestyle.
That's right.
And I know, too, Kenny, that all too much from having taught in the prisons in and also in Colorado, that very few inmates have supportive family or friends.
That's right.
It's so sad.
When I was in prison, I was fortunate to live. My whole experience was 28 months, and out of the 28 months, I lived with the same man in a cell 8 feet wide by 12 feet long for 18 of those months. And while I received sometimes 4 or 5 letters a day, and I did receive mail every day that I was in prison, that they passed mail, which is Monday through Saturday, my cellmate, never received a piece of mail the entire time I was there.
Oh,
with
my
him.
Goodness.
Not one piece of mail. And I'll tell you, my cellmate is a lifer. He is still in prison. I write him often and send him packages, but his family has given up on him. He killed his best friend by accident. Over they were playing with a gun that went off and killed him.
Oh, dear.
And I know this to be true because I read his court papers while I was in prison. Yet at the same time, Jester has now been in prison 17 years. He has absolutely one person on the street that supports him, and that's myself.
Wow.
Now you can imagine, this is all, you can imagine the despair that he faces every single day, knowing that nobody on the outside sends him mail. When he has an opportunity to use the phone, he has one person to call. And if his phone time is a time that I am not home, even that call will be missed.
Wow.
He has nobody to send him a birthday card. He has nobody to send a Mother's Day card or a Father's Day card to. yet at the same time, this is also a man who has completed an undergraduate college degree. He works in the hospital at the prison in the special dietary section. He helps countless young inmates that come to prison to know how to survive within prison, meaning how do you get a job? What do you do on the yard? You know, these are all things that these inmates will teach you. And yet at the same time, not one person from society at large, other than myself, would take even 5 minutes to sign a card to send to my former cellie. And that's another issue that parolees must deal with. When they get out of prison, it is unusual that people will rally to help them, period. Which is why I decided that I was going to make a difference, because my family made a difference for me.
Right.
You know, it was an amazing feeling to be ready to come home from prison and to have my aunt and my uncle ask me what color shirt I wanted to wear home.
Wow.
And I didn't know what to say.
Right.
You know, they sent me clothes to wear home. I didn't know what to say to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was yet another experience to walk off that yard and be escorted off the yard by countless people cheering me on.
Wow.
You know? It was an amazing feeling to have lifers say to me, don't forget from where you come, because there will be others that you can help. And the last 4 years, I have helped over 60 men and women who have come out of prison to be able to find a place to live, to know that they have a friend. And it's time that we understand, as you said, that we take care of ourselves and help others to learn how to take care of themselves
as
well. You know?
It's so essential. And I want to take just a moment here to remind our listeners, if you've just joined us, this is Global Family Live. I'm your host, Kay Snow Davis, and we have our very special guest today, Kenny Callahan. We're talking about light behind the wall. And Kenny is sharing with us his experience having been behind the wall and the light that he found there and the light that he is bringing to the world based on his experience and what he learned there. Now, Kenny, one of my greatest concerns, and you're representing this so validly and clearly, at the rate we're incarcerating people and youth and such a high number being incarcerated for nonviolent conditions, I consider that we are incarcerating some of our greatest resources and abandoning them as if we'd taken them to the city dump.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a real danger in any society that is building more prisons than schools and having the dropout rate that we have in schools, which those are preparing those young people who are dropping out to go to prison. So we have a wealth of minds, wonderful, brilliant minds, as you explained about your cellmate, that have no place to serve other than the confinement of the prison because they have become the disregarded, the disenfranchised, and long forgotten members of society. And yet we have so many places that bright minds could serve even from behind the wall. So I'm interested, Kenny, in any thoughts that you have how we can support programs where we can have more of these resources of the bright minds, that they can have the support they need and make contributions to society. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is my passion, which is why I wanted to return to the prison systems as soon as I could to meet people and to tell my story and to develop friendships with them. Because while in prison, if you do not have a high school degree, they will make it mandatory for you to go. You can either get a job or go to school.
Uh-huh.
And if you do not have a high school diploma, they will require you to go to school if you're going to be in prison long enough.
Uh-huh.
I believe you have to be there 18 months to be able to qualify to go to school.
Uh-huh.
And from what I experienced in prison and helping men get through the GED test, that the education is fairly good in prison.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, when somebody paroled, the ability for a felon to get a job or to qualify for any other kind of assistance program where there's background checks or they have to be trusted is very, very limited.
Yes, it is.
It's very limited. Even churches are reluctant to have a known felon around. I am an ordained minister. I was ordained prior to going to prison. And I have to tell you, not one pastor that I served with in the Los Angeles area sent me a postcard while I was in prison. Not one lent a hand to me when I came home, even though I reached out. So in my opinion, I do not encourage people to go to many churches, because churches have not been an avenue of support. What I encourage people to do is to try to somehow find organizations that treat addiction. The treatment centers are much, much more able to help somebody who, number one, has been incarcerated because of a drug offense or an alcohol offense, or an offense that was made while they were using drugs or alcohol. Treatment centers are much more willing and able to help somebody and to let them experience what it's like to be angry, to work through feelings. They give unconditional support through their programming for people to be able to learn how to handle society without using drugs and alcohol. They are much more willing to partner with other organizations to help. And these areas of support are very far and very few between. In the San Fernando Valley, I recommend that the people that I work with coming out try to connect with Tarzana Treatment Center, that they try to connect with Cry Help Treatment Center, that they try to connect with the Victory House Treatment Center, because these are places that will help them get plugged in to appropriate systems for help. And I have to tell you something else. A person who is a drug addict who has learned to survive on the street is a very smart person.
Absolutely.
And trying to channel their intelligence in ways to help themselves is a very interesting journey, because you have to understand that society at large has told these people that they're bad. Instead of looking at a drug addict or an alcoholic as a sick individual trying to get help, we label them as bad people. A drug addict is not a bad person. A drug addict trying to better themselves is a sick person trying to get better. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I think what you've just said, Kenny, is one of our biggest issues is when we have a society that is run on a polarized value system. Everything
yes.
is either black or white,
yes.
good or bad, right or wrong. We have set up a man-made condition that is a no-win.
That's correct.
Because there can be no win for anybody when we polarize our value systems, when all of life is dependent upon the circle of life.
That's true.
And so when we create exclusion at any level for any reason, of which our society is so prone to do,
yes.
instead of creating a sense of unification, compassion, or cooperation, exclusion and isolationism and diminishment and this incredible arbitrary value system causes so much harm from the time our babies start even moving in their own home and then are exposed as they grow to society. This is one of the most demeaning factors we have, that you're either right or wrong. You either get an A or an F or anywhere in between. Everything is evaluated on the right and wrong system. Our cells and our body don't function that way.
That's true.
There's nothing in the universe that functions right or wrong.
That's right.
So when we've isolated ourselves as a species into a value system that is so dysfunctional and continues to be dysfunctional, the harm that it's causing, absolutely, we must turn this around and realize that we have people. Human beings are not disposable items.
That's right.
And that we all make choices that we can regret immeasurably or minutely, and we need the opportunity to learn from those choices that have caused our self-harm or others and grow from that, and we cannot do that alone.
We cannot. Kay, you said something that's so important, and that is, you know, this die and cast system, it's like a patriarchal system that our society has developed. And it almost seems to me now, as a person has been incarcerated and been through the hell of losing everything, is confusing for my friends. And now as I've returned back to ministry, my colleagues, my former colleagues and my new colleagues, it's very interesting because as I talk about the old Kenny pre-prison, the people that interact with me now, it's as if they get to know a whole different person, because the person that I have become is not the person who went into those prison gates. And the person that came out of those prison gates was an empty, angry, desperate, confused man. And it is when I was able to receive love from my family and slowly choose people to put into my life who cared for me, allowed me to be angry and upset, and helped me to think differently, that my life began to change. But the most significant change came from when I was behind the prison gates and I saw lifers, men that had killed other people, cry over their crimes. When I saw Jester repeatedly cry that cared about him, I realized that my cellmate and so many of my friends were human beings that had feelings, that had a heart, and I don't mean just a heart that beats blood, a heart to live and a heart to try to be accepted and to be given another chance. To be year after year, the prison gate, to be slammed on their faces at their parole hearing, that's when my vision started to get different to the human experience. It is unusual, I think, for people to accept somebody who has committed a crime or who is a drug addict or who is honest. And I have to tell you, it has been a joy to continuously work with inmates who have self-discovery of the hope of a new life, because they look at me. They see me wearing a clerical collar. They see me preach. They see me play the piano. They see me go to work. They see me struggle. And they long to have those same experiences. And the only thing that I know to do is to take them by the hand and lead them through if they're willing to do the work.
That is so true, that literally the modeling that you're doing, Kenny, your willingness to be compassionate and caring inspires and motivates those who are truly desirous of doing the work, because No one can do it for us.
That's right.
No one lives in our skin.
That's right.
No one's managing our thinking or our choices. And with the emptiness that you're talking about, that emptiness in returning to a society that is non-structured, invasive, demeaning, isolationist, and many, many things that are challenging for everyday living, let alone being removed from society and then re-entering. The shock is extreme.
Yes.
And then you're also dealing with the pain,
yes,
the loss, the anger, the resentments, all of the emotions that emerge in that empty space as you're trying to once again create a life that has a foundation.
That's right. And Kay, I have to tell you, for me, I have come to a place in my own life where I realize what allows me to help another human being is the reality that I have experienced pain, deep, deep pain at the core of my being. So much has been taken from me. You know, my own children, I do not have relationship with today because of the man that they knew before. I long to be able to just see them face to face, to be able to hold them, to be able to make amends to them because of my behavior. Unfortunately, that has not happened. Yet at the same time, I can look at an inmate and tell instantly if he or she is really wanting to change.
Yes.
And if they're wanting to change, I'm willing to help them.
Yes.
There is no difference from looking at that man or woman coming out of prison for me than looking at the doctor in my congregation who cries because his wife or his partner has just experienced a life-debilitating illness.
Right.
So we have not even talked about tonight the men and women that come out with HIV or AIDS, which is a whole nother issue that they are faced with in society.
Yes.
You know, being loved by somebody. You know, there's such a stigma in our world that HIV or AIDS is a death sentence. And in today's society, that is not true. I'm a person who has lived with HIV for many years. And when I came out of prison, I was guaranteed health care while I was on parole. And my health care has continued. But I have to tell you, it is during my parole and incarceration that my health improved because
wow.
I was able to be honest with myself and with other people who I am, and my body responded in a way that even though I was on medication for a little over 5 years, I am not on medication today. I have been medication-free for almost 4 years, and I believe it's because I do not have to live a lie anymore today. I can live as the person that I was created to be. And that has freed me in many other ways as well.
Well, and Kenny, science is proving just exactly what you've stated. A magnificent book, and you may have read it, is called Biology of Belief.
Oh, yes.
By Dr. Bruce Lipton, and
yes,
in his own life story, which was very transformative because he was in his own kind of prison. It was a mental prison.
Yes.
And in his transformation and release to accepting universal wisdom,
mm-hmm,
that he has and is supporting us to become educated in just what the environment that we live in and the thoughts that we think, how they influence the cellular membrane of 50 trillion cells in our body.
Mm-hmm.
So what we think,
mm-hmm,
is an electromagnetic charge,
yes,
to the cell membrane, and it is influencing our immune system every day and our health and our wellness. Now, if we look at society at large, not only do we have this increase in recidivism, but we have an increase in immune deficient illnesses,
mm-hmm.
and it's a result of the onslaught
mm-hmm.
of the amount of toxicity that comes in, whether that comes in as an ingested toxin or comes in through thoughts that are toxic, behavior that's toxic,
mm-hmm.
conditions that are toxic, relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So our toxic conditions are not just what we ingest, but it's what we create in our thinking.
And that is so
the
true.
Self can't survive with all of that.
That's right. And you also mentioned something else that I think I would like to touch on, and that is that we can become imprisoned ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, since I have paroled, it's very interesting to me that I am very proactive. I am a very active, out gay man within the gay community and within the society at large. And one of the things that I see more and more is that while I was incarcerated behind the prison gate, my sentence of incarceration ended. And when it ended, I was able, with the help of my family especially and a few friends, to be able to break the chains that kept me incarcerated long before the judge sent me to prison.
Exactly.
And I don't have to return to that place of incarceration in my mind or in my body or in society ever again, because, Kay, I am not a man that any longer lives by fear. I am a
man the key.
Who lives by grace.
Yes.
You know, in
and truth.
And truth. And I, you know, when I have done something that may not be exactly right on, I immediately correct that lie.
Yes.
I will not live a lie today. I have spent the past 2 years of my life trying to make amends to people for the harm that I have done to them. And many people have responded. Some have said they are grateful for my sobriety, grateful for my honesty and change of life, but they do not want to have a relationship with me. And I have to accept that and move on.
Right.
Some have not been willing to meet with me. My former wife refuses to meet with me, and my children I do not have a relationship with as well. And the only thing I can do is pray for the day that I will be able to meet with them and share with them the man that I have become today.
Exactly. And I think, Kenny, yeah, and I think what you're reflecting to us throughout your sharing with us tonight, there's some basic principles that when we combine lack of education, personal experience, with an arbitrary polarized value system, it's very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
It traps minds throughout the world into conditions that are isolating and judgmental and harmful on every level for all life. And when I was working with the men in Kauai, and they were ranging in age from anywhere from 18 up into 50, sometimes 60s, and these were the men in the lockup.
Mm-hmm.
And I reminded them that they were in prison before they ever got there.
Yes.
And that this time, while we had the time together to learn and grow together, that this was their opportunity to use the time where they were in a place and could actually work with their mind in a different way, that if they really wanted to be out of prison, it wasn't just about going out the door that's been locked for however long. It's where is your mind when you hit the street? Where is your heart when you hit the street? And how much are you really going to take responsibility to think in a totally different way?
Yeah.
And that, I feel, takes education, it takes compassion, it takes time, And for those who are choosing to get out of prison, period, they can do it.
They can do
it. They can absolutely do it.
And I have to tell you, it was absolutely my experience that while I was in prison, that I lived behind the prison gates, but I felt free. I felt free.
Yes.
Part of the reason I felt free was that I knew I had support. But I also was encouraged by my friends that I lived with in behind the prison gates to do well, to not forget from where I have come. And that meant don't go back to the place that got you here.
Right.
But don't forget those that you have left behind as well.
Right.
And it is just so true. Prison is a state of mind. Because for some men and women, living in prison is a much better life than they will ever have in society. And
yes.
That being said, society needs to understand that there are many people who need to go back to prison because it's a better way of life, because they do not have avenues of help outside of prison.
Right.
And people will challenge me on this thought, but it is reality. It is absolute reality. Go to the barrios and talk to people. Find out why they are there, and people will see. You can take the blinders off your eyes.
Yes.
It is a joy at Many Paths Bookstore to be in a place today where so much of my life experience can be a place of helping other people. There is not one day that somebody doesn't come in that just needs a touch of kindness.
Yes.
And we're able to give it to them. You know, there is not one day that any inmate living with any medical condition or any mental or psychological condition doesn't need to know that he or she is worth loving. That he or she is worth somebody caring for and reaching out a hand and saying, I've been there, I'll help you. Not one person that doesn't deserve that. And I believe that as people are being taught that can happen for us all. It's happened for me, and it's happened for people I've worked with, and I long to see it happen for everyone. But I also long to see it happen for the person who feels that they are better than the incarcerated person, because that's the dangerous person.
That's right.
That's the person living behind fear and egotism. And you know, we need to love each other enough to believe that the universe is calling us all to freedom. And when that happens, grace will abound. I truly believe that.
I truly do as well, Kenny. And the thing that what you were just saying, you know, not only do we have this polarized value system, but with that polarized value system of right or wrong is a built-in lie, a major lie, that focuses on scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is about there's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that is this quantified aspect that love has to be earned.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's only so much to go around, and why would you waste it here or waste it there? Now, I think Mother Teresa was an incredible example. This little tiny woman, and she was so clear that in every face, I only see the face of God.
Yeah.
And when we really get past this polarized value system and realize all life is created from the force field of love. And there is no scarcity in love because it's not an emotional condition. It's a force field from whence life is generated.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if we are not in love with life, and we're not in love with our body, we are denying the force field literally from whence our breath comes.
Mm-hmm.
So we are causing our death while we're still breathing.
Mm.
So love is the unifying factor of all forms of life, and it is truly a vibrational field. Dr. Masaru Emoto, in his work with water, has pictures of crystals of water that have been infused with consciousness. And the most beautiful crystals, in his opinion, out of his work, are gratitude and love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the place that I am for you, Kenny. I am in gratitude. I'm in love and appreciation for you and your life, for your courage, for your commitment to take the amazing life classrooms that you've been through and extend your life through love and caring to make a difference in places where vulnerability is so seeking the strength of love and support. And I can't believe our hour has gone by so quickly, but I'm deeply grateful for what you're doing, and I would like to have you back on again so we can continue exploring how can society at large become better educated and more supportive for our inmates as well as our parolees, and how can we work together as a global family to truly live the principles of love and compassion and caring. So I hope you'll be willing to come be with us again on Global Family Live, Kenny.
Well, I can hardly wait for the invitation.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you for your work.
And I would like to mention that Kenny gave me permission. There are contact numbers that you can use if you want to have continued conversation with him, if you know of people who need this support, that you can contact Kenny Callahan. And one number is at the Many Paths Bookstore, which in itself is a total treat. If you want to go there and see him in person, if you're not in California, you may need to call him at 818-762-4789. Now, that's the bookstore, and Kenny is there during the day. His home phone number, of which he is generous and kind and willing to share, is 818-783-7317. So I thank you for listening. I thank you for your interest. I thank you for the life that you're living and the contribution that you're making. So once again, you can get additional information about my work at www.globalfamilylive.com. I have a free teleconference call that gives you an overview on two of my books and also on generational cycles. That phone number, which is free, you can call anytime, is 212-990-7370. If you want to hear the show again or refer someone, you can go to the archives that's on the homepage of BBS Radio. Now, you're in for a treat next week. My special guest will be Dr. Deb Yerman, a chiropractor here in Los Angeles. And we're going to talk about I Want to Be Healthy. So until next week, I'm saying to you, Ano Ai Ko Alehele, blessings on your journey. Ahui ho, until we meet again. Aloha.
Did you know your name and date of birth speak volumes about you as a person and as a spiritual being? Well, your personal numerology can shine a light on your life's purpose, your true potential, and give you insight about your soul's journey in this lifetime. Join Allison Bachman, host of Visible by Numbers,